You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
Sunday, April 22nd, 2012, and broadcasting live from the Current Events Annex of the Webcast Beacon Network building, this is episode 65 of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from BladeBuddy.com, Eric Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
From EvilSpaceCat.com, Marie Terry.
Hey, y'all.
From 910comics.com, that's 910cmx.com, Thomas Revor.
Give a man a little power and he just goes nuts.
Little men. And sitting in for hosting duties this week, I'm Jay Strasberg. And now, the news. Our top story this week, Mark Waid teases his new site, Thrillbent. So the big news is that really over the last couple weeks has been Mark Waid's push towards digital publishing. Well, last weekend at Chicago's C2E2, Waid unveiled Thrillbent, the online portal where he's going to release his comics. And Digital Spy, Comic Book Resources, USA Today, and several others covered the story. So starting May 1st, 2012, Waid plans to release a new one-shot story every week online, along with his current serial, Insufferable. He wants to experiment with the digital medium to see how best to make it work. And for $3.99 a print comic, and after discounting the price for a distributor and paying for the printing and another independent comic that tried it in the print world, really couldn't do this. They'd only make about 80 to 90 cents back over the cover price. But Waid is claiming that the web is the democratization of the art form, and that while there's going to be a lot of bad comics out there, there will also be a lot of good ones that really couldn't have survived in the print market. Now, as for monetization of the site, Waid admits that he doesn't really have a plan. I mean, he's not going to get rich with this. He says he'll try and experiment using different options like ads, corporate sponsorships, and even putting material behind a paywall. And he states that his goal is doing this is really just to break even and to garner enough support for more stories and to explore other options like a movie or TV. So we wish him good luck. We'll all be watching because it's a really intrusion of a big name into something we're all doing. And, you know, keep an eye on it. So up next, we have Buzz with Eric.
Thank you, Jason. First story in Buzz is Tim Burton is judging an Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter-inspired fan art submission contest. This is to promote the new movie coming up based on the popular novel Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It is offering a number of prizes for top submissions. The top prize for a submission is going to be a private screening. And the four runners-up will have a signed movie poster from Tim Burton. This is one of the first. This is his promotion for the comic. And Marie, you said you had something else on this?
Yeah, it was just recently sent out. If you're a member of DeviantArt, there is an art contest currently going on DeviantArt to do a portrait of the main character of Dark Shadows that Johnny Depp is playing, Barnabas Collins. And there are a number of prizes there as well, including $3,500 cash and your art being basically given to Tim Burton to actually display in his home. It's going to be framed and you're going to get a bunch of swag and a bunch of points if you're a part of that. And the second place is actually $2,500 and there's a third place at $1,500.
That's impressive. And so that takes us through the Tim Burton's social media there. The second Buzz article we have is coming to us from Bleeding Cool. And this is a story about Boom's Adventure Time comics. And they are tapping yet another webcomic professional to write the Adventure Time comic entitled Marceline and the Scream Queens, and this is being done by Meredith Grand of Octopus Pie. So Boom Studios and Adventure Time has been using quite a bit of webcomic professionals to write their comics, and it's an interesting thing to see. That takes us through our Buzz, and I'm going to hand it off back to you, Jason, for business news.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Couple stories in business this week. Our first one comes from Comics Alliance, where they give a heads up on Topatico's spring book lineup looks like that we can expect things from Ryan Pequin of Three Award Phrase, Matthew Boyd and Aya McConville of Three Panel Soul, and also it looks like some new editions of Dinosaur Comics, MS Paint Adventures, and A Softer World. So, you know, more stuff to spend your money on. Next story, Akewood's Honor System from Akewood via Fleen. We are directed to look at Chris Onstad's new Akewood non-physical goods honor system and purchase page. Onstad synopsizes it pretty well on his site, where he says that you can download Akewood's ebook strips and posters for free on the honor system. And he says, we're trying the new system out because over time our readers have proven to be wonderfully and proactively supportive. Here is our way of making it easier for you to enjoy our work. More material added regularly. Suggested donations are listed by each item, or you can pay a lump sum. So basically, a lot of his work is available for download for free. And if, you know, it's something you want to kick in some money for, he highly recommends it. And we do too. It's an interesting system. I hope that it pans out for him. Last story from Comic Book Resources. It looks like we have two more of the old Namco Bandai IPs going into Shifty Look as a webcomic. They're reimagining their characters in webcomic form to gain traction and market share. These two new titles are the 1986 coin-op side-scroller Rolling Thunder and Wonder Momo Battle Idol, which was actually a Japan-only game that was a beat-em-up that was released in 1987. All right, and that takes care of business. Next, we're going to hand it over to Tom with tech.
Actually, we're going to break, Jason, at this point.
Oh, then we'll see you in a little bit.
Do you enjoy digitally composed and/or remixed music? Love a variety of musical styles? Look no further than LapFoxTracks.com. Over a dozen different composers with individual stylings. Well, affordable, high quality musical tracks with much more bass than what is technically possible for this podcast promo. Check out LapFoxTracks.com.
And Tom, I told you, if you come on the show like this again, hi, everybody. We're back. Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, and we're going to go straight into tech with Tom.
You may have wondered why I've called you here today. Well, it is to take a look at the mystery of DC Comics and Comixology. Apparently, at the C2E2 Comixology panel, it was confirmed that DC graphic novels are no longer being sold through Kindle Fire's Comixology app, and CEO David Steinberger said it was intentional. However, people are not sure why, because you can still buy the DC books via Amazon and the Kindle store, and you can buy tons of DC comics through Comixology. The story comes to us over at comicsbeat.com, so see if you can look into it and solve this mystery. Also in tech news, Meteor, the real-time Java framework that grabbed developer interest earlier this month, is changing licensing. Apparently, there are a lot of people who are unhappy because it was being released under the GPL, or General Public License. As such, anything that uses anything licensed under GPL cannot be used for commercial purposes. It all has to be released free. So the licensing has been changed to the MIT license, which means it can now be used to develop both open source and commercial software. Over on Nikorin's post over on Hacker News, he states, "As exciting as Meteor is, very, their approach to licensing kills it for me. The products I am working on cannot be licensed under GPL for a large number of reasons, and their, quote, talk to us and we'll see what we can do, close quote, policy puts too much risk into my business plan." So apparently they've bowed to public pressure, and it is now able to be used for those commercial purposes. And finally, in tech news, for those who have always wondered what the difference is between the user experience and the user interface is, over on design.org, they have the difference between user experience and user interface subtleties explained in Serial. That's right. Serial. Nothing more can be said about it. Go ahead and go over to design.org. We'll have a link on our website at the end of the show and take a look at it. And now with that, let's go ahead and head on over to our next section. Jason?
Why bother listening to the rest of this podcast? Just go to see the Serial thing.
Yeah.
I actually used to like Kix a lot, you know. Anyways, on to Tidbits. All right, we have a couple more stories over in Tidbits. We're starting out with Comics Alliance, where we're told that Wizard World Incorporated is getting together with Michael, the Situation Sorrentino of Jersey Shore fame, so okay. He can star in his own superhero comic. They're also going to bring in Sorrentino's brothers Mark and Frank, as well as his sister Melissa and his mother Linda. So if you're a big fan of the Jersey Shore show, you can check that out. Now, I just want to take a step back here and really kind of say that this really isn't helping out the comics industry, but and it looks more like a grab for popularity, because you know Wizard World really hasn't published anything since I think that the comic humor parody piece about a year ago. So best of luck to them. Really want to see how long that goes. Hopefully not a couple of months. Next up, from via Comics Alliance over to the Daily Cartoonist, where we're told that Dave Kellett is once again releasing his work online for free. What is happening is that the Shouting Creator has been nominated for another Eisner Award, and it's the best humor category for his book Coffee, It's What's for Dinner. And just like he did last year, he's releasing the book as a free download. His thinking is that he may not be represented by a big publisher, but he does have the work, so Kellett plans to just let it speak for itself. Good way to release it. And then on to our final tidbit story, the graphic textbook. From Comics Alliance, so we're told that a nonprofit has put together a Kickstarter for Reading with Pictures, the graphic textbook. It's a 144-page anthology aimed at 3 to 6 graders, and is actually, I'm sorry, ages 3 to 6, and featuring the talents of creators including Roger Landridge and Fred Land Lane. The aim of the book is to prove once and for all that comics belong in the classroom by creating a comic that every teacher will actually want to use as a textbook. So you can actually check out this Kickstarter at their site, readingpictures.org, and yeah, good luck to them. And then we're going to move over to Oddities with Eric.
Thank you, Jason. Top story in Oddities is the announcement that Shia LaBeouf has published his own self-published comic. And it comes with the type of quality and attention to detail we expect from Shia LaBeouf. it's an interesting thing to look at.
Interesting is a word.
Yes, yeah. Interesting is a word. We'll leave it at that and move on to our next oddity. And to say that someone is actually working on a sonic screwdriver from Doctor Who. This comes to us from originally Tor.com and takes us to the Mary Sue.com, showing the actions of a sonic screwdriver. Now, unlike the typical sonic screwdriver you are thinking of that can do anything, this one apparently only loosens screws, so they have a bit of work to do on it yet.
If I may interject something in there, Eric, actually this is a very fascinating story, because usually sonics, they've only been able to push something with it. Mm-hmm. Now they've actually been able to tune it, and using harmonics, are able to turn the screw, or actually turn a screw that is floating in water. But it is it's a fascinating step for all the science geeks out there.
It is actually very cool.
And you could kill a Cyberman with that, you know.
If he's floating in water.
Yeah, if he's floating. And on that note, we'll hand it over to Marie to talk about some of our opinion pieces for this week.
We have two pieces in the opinion section. The first one comes to us from ComicsAlliance.com, and it is a call out to the Eisner Awards to expand their digital comic categories by Lauren Davis. And basically, it's a call out that there's only one category, really, in the Eisners for digital comics, but it doesn't really – there's some of the comics that have won it, which are sort of, you know, make sense, and then there's a lot which don't. And it seems that they're sort of treating it just like another print category rather than embracing what the digital comics are about. And there's some suggestions as to additional categories that this person would like to see. And I've got my own opinions, I'll just save for the discussion portion, of course. But you can go ahead and read it and see if you agree or you don't agree with their point. The next one comes from somebody who has a lot of opinions. Scott Kurtz over on PvP Online has his own opinion on the whole thrill bent thing with Mark Waid. And he has written a piece on it. He seems to be actually fairly positive about it, all told, in his opinion, and that it's sort of something he's been waiting for somebody to actually do, and is kind of foreshadowing that the industry has arrived, as it were. At least that's what I got out of it. You can read it yourself and see what you get out of it. And there's some interesting thoughts from him about that there. If you want to check it out, of course, it's on PvP Online. And that's all the opinions pieces. And so I guess we're back to you, Jason.
Okay, thanks, Marie. All right, we got to pay the bills, so we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back, and you've come back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. I'm your host, Jay Strasberg, and we are back with Eric Kimball.
Greetings.
Marie Terry.
Hi.
Hi. And Thomas Rivore.
Hello, folks.
Hello, and you have reached our discussion portion. So our guests today are DJ Kaufman, creator of Hero by Night.
Aloha.
Mr. Jason Embry of jasonembry.net, also associated with Hero by Night. And, okay, I'll let him talk. Mr. T. Campbell of tcampbell.net. So we are ready to go on. Our first discussion point, which has really garnered a lot of interest from all of us here, is the Mark Waid and Real Bench release. Now, I know that both T and DJ Kaufman had a little bit to say about that. DJ, could you kind of give us a little bit of an idea of your perspective?
Yeah, I'll try to be brief, but basically, no. I'll try to be briefer than T usually is.
It's too early for that.
What a low bar to set for yourself. I don't know why you do that.
Because T and I could talk for hours. But basically you have Mark Waid. I mean, I've known of him and known him for, not known him personally, but in the comic book world, kind of realizing that digital, he's been taking his lumps in the comic book community for many years about talking about digital. And he's finally willing to just experiment in public and try these things and kind of, you know, he's done enough experimenting that now Marvel and these other places are, you know, taking note and saying, why don't we do this? And I really liked the actual, it's okay to put that on paper. Like, let's go try digital. And, you know, and of course he's not saying that they put a flag in this and that they're pioneers of this. But they're actually experimenting live with things they're putting out, like the Luthor or the Marvel Nova thing, Infinite. And when I saw the Marvel Infinite thing, it really excited me because Jason Embry and I have been, since we got the rights back to Hero by Night, we've been having a discussion like, we don't want to put this out like a page a day and these long form stories. They don't seem to work well like that. And this, the way that they put out their thing really inspired us to kind of say, let's put this out more like a storyboard or like something's totally unique that hasn't been really done in this fashion before. So it's kind of cool to see all the experiments and discussions going on. It's been a long time in web comics or in digital comics where there's been this type of excitement.
Well, it's actually, to me, it seems more like somebody in the, quote, professional print world is taking it seriously. I mean, Wade, as you said, Wade's been talking about this for a long time, and we've seen the half-assed attempts like Zuda from DC and Warner Brothers, where it was, you know, we'll just do something and people will lap it up. No, this is someone who actually has a passion for the medium, who actually has a desire to work in the medium rather than the BS that we've seen from some of the other companies. The Infinite Comic things, I mean, it hasn't excited me because it's really nothing spectacular to me. It's another promo type thing rather than using the medium for what it could be. But yeah, I'm thrill bent. I'm looking at some of the names behind it. I mean, not just Mark Waid, who's been a name in the comics for a long time, but I mean, John Rogers, who is one of the co-creators of the TV show Leverage, which has been a high-ranking cable series for a long time. Waid is working with Peter Krause, who's the artist over on Irredeemable. So, I mean, he's bringing in people out of the, quote, print medium and doing it in the digital medium with a seriousness that you haven't seen outside of the webcomic's world.
Yeah. Well, Tom, go ahead, DJ.
I just think it's a much smarter way to put out these concepts. So, of course, Hollywood people are going to be interested. You know, how can we do this quicker, more efficiently, and have the readers happy?
Right. Well, there's a couple things. And Tom, it's funny that you mentioned the guy from Leverage. I mean, does that mean that Waid is really just kind of looking for any kind of profit to be made as a TV production or as a movie production? Is that really where the money is now?
Without getting into his mind, I can't say. But, I mean, the fact that he is experimenting, I hate to quote Kurtz over there, but yeah, the fact that he is experimenting and he's willing to take some risks at it, and he doesn't seem to be motivated by the profit margin as much as the big boys would be, or even some of us on the smaller scale. He's got the resources behind it, and having some of these names behind him allows him to take some risks. I mean, will it fail? I don't know. Will it succeed? I don't know. But the fact that it's being done is something that we should be trumpeting. I'm excited about it. Whether or not it actually works is another thing, but I think it's a great thing to see more of, especially after all the bad press that we've gotten from other, quote, professionals in the print world. It's great to be recognized as a unique medium, as Waid is doing, to say that there is going to be things that you can't do in the print world like he's been doing. And granted, some of the stuff he's doing is stuff we've experimented with over the decade or longer in the electronic world that we've tried, and some of it has worked, some of it hasn't, but to see somebody else trying it with a seriousness and getting the press for it, yeah, I'm all for that.
I'd like to jump in on that point. Yes, we have been trying this kind of thing for a very long time. And one of the things that concerns me quite a bit when I think about it is that Mark Waid seems to act for all the world like he's not aware of this. Surely it cannot have escaped his attention that there are other people who have been doing digital comics for some time and making a decent living at them. He's got the authority and the ability to contact some of these people, even do some cross promotion with them. Yet every time that someone from the comic book world steps into this space, they seem to think that no one else has done it before, or that's how they behave.
Or they mention Warren Ellis. I mean,
I don't want to cut you off, T, but actually, if you listen to his podcasts from the panels and such, Mark Waid has been really vocal about webcomics and digital comics.
He's been very vocal about the potential.
I know the names that he's said, but if you go listen to the, he's actually given quite a number of props. He's not trying to come in and take over anything. As a matter of fact, I think he kind of has the feeling that a rising tide kind of lifts all ships. He's not trying to even be in what we, the old schoolers, consider the web comics community. But he would like to. He would be open to that, to you know, working with people, and he's opened his forums up to anybody that wants to come in and have the conversation. So,
and I think there's some good conversations that are going on there, and it's less to do, I think, with actual comics and more to do with the reader experience of those comics. And I think that's what we're trying to do with Hero by Night now, and that's what Mark is aiming to do with Thrillbent, is develop something for readers to where it's a different experience than just looking at a gag comic online or a page a day or a Monday, Wednesday, Friday update. And you're giving the reader some control of how they're experiencing the story and not just actually reading a print comic or the web comics that we've been used to for the last 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, there are several comics I could think of, web comics that I could think of off the top of my head. City of Reality from a good friend of mine, Ian Sampson, or Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki from Kitty Hawk, who both of which do, rather than page a day, they do it as a storyline and update when they can. It's a completely different method of writing than some of us do, either the gag of the day or the page at a time, because you have to open with the hook and the climax and every time rather than having a lengthy story. It makes it a lot more difficult, but it is a unique medium for that as well. I'm glad to see people experimenting with stuff like this.
Yeah, I think there's sort of two sides to this. I kind of agree with T that reading through a lot of what Mark Waid says he's doing, it really feels like he's trying to repeat the 90s. I mean, I read a lot of what he says he's doing, and a lot of the sort of – I'm sort of against the argument for the user experience on comics because it generally doesn't work out well. And the reason is when people want to read a comic, they want to read a comic. They just want to see the page, and the more sort of gimmicks you give it.
Well, this is about getting rid of the bells and whistles and motion comics and junk like that. It's about being able to click on something and have it open on anything, your iPad, your Kindle, your browser screen. And they're actually getting rid of the junk that's been around, like the bells and whistles and, you know,
rather than the user experience, more of a story experience.
Avengers versus X-Men number one is a pretty persuasive argument in favor of what Waid is doing with that in mind, because it does read like, yes, someone put some thought into making it a slightly more special digital experience, but they didn't design something that beats you over the head with how much of a digital comic it is. That's the kind of rookie mistake that a lot of beginners do make, and this is a much smoother reading experience, so I do give props for that, and it does give me some hope. The other thing that I'm concerned while I have the floor is I went to the thrillbent.com site today. There's a logo and a note that the site will be launching on May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to stay there for more than a few seconds, it will ask you for a username and password.
Yeah.
That's a little tone deaf.
That might be a little early to tell, though. I mean, that there's absolutely – I haven't checked out the website in a while. There's just absolutely no content there?
No, they have it shut off because they're building it.
Soon type of stuff.
Yes, but when you have a website that you're not ready to show people, you just don't show it to them. You make the thrillbent.com URL redirect somewhere else, or you know, I would also have accepted a blank page with the logo and the announcement coming soon. That's fine. It's the fact that it's asking me for a username and password that I have no way of getting that strikes me as a PR misstep. Let's put it that way.
I think it's like, who gives a crap? I mean, let's.
I think it's a minor thing.
Well, I'm comfortable with it. I think in the regards that it's not asking me for my Facebook information like every other website.
Agreed.
you know.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, if it had been a area, it's a pop-up, the standard type of pop-up that you get for logging into a site as opposed to logging on the site. If it had been asking for the email so you can be notified when the site opens, I would have been all for that. This is kind of a rookie mistake.
Yeah, it kind of feels like when I'm looking at it, like he's missed this opportunity to create further hype. Like even if he had just put up a splash page with a put your email in to be in our newsletter or to be notified when it's up or whatever, because people forget. And it just seems like, I don't know, the whole thing smacks to me of somebody who is late to the party and missed a whole bunch of stuff that has already been established, has already been done. And, like, you know, everybody's really excited about this experimentation he's going to be doing, but I'm not seeing anything really new. I'm seeing just somebody who's bringing some industry, like, some kind of industry legitimacy or something that all the people in industry know that can, you know, either love or hate. And they're coming into essentially our world, people who've been here for forever and doing the same thing that we've seen how many other people doing when they come and jump into this world with all their vim and vigor. It just doesn't seem new to me, and it doesn't seem like – it seems like they're making mistakes that are common. Like this whole – like he has this huge – I mean he's getting covered by big-time newspapers and stuff like we would never get, and he's doesn't even have splash art up on his site and a sign-up. Like that's like a classic – like marketing mistake. It's just missing the boat.
It's like we're back in the 90s. In fact, I just opened up Explorer so I could actually look at it in the right way. So, you know, something that we're kind of, we really, something else we should probably get to is that Scott Kurtz also made a comment. And the things that I'm hearing, you know,
Kurtz made a comment on something? Oh my God, let me write it in my calendar.
Kurtz made a polite and considerate comment on something.
Yeah. Well,
so, actually do write it.
Relatively speaking.
It was actually fairly well written. So I think we should look at that. And the thing that to me that I really want to get an opinion on, you know, mostly except for a couple doubts and stuff, this everybody in the webcomic community seems fairly positive about this. Am I wrong in this reading?
I'm positive that I'd like to take issue with something someone else said earlier. I think that the people who are actually working on Zooda, as opposed to the higher ups at Warner that authorized it, I think that those people did have a passion for the medium that rivals Wade's. I spoke to them. I thought they were very devoted to it, but they did make the same mistake that I seem to think that I think Wade is making. They'd think of it as a blank canvas. It doesn't even occur to them to talk to people who have done this. I don't want this to turn into an ego trip, but I was doing an Action Comics collective in 2003. It took us about a year after I started and 2 years after the company started to realize that our paywall system had a ceiling because of the way the market was behaving at the time.
But was that
five minutes of conversation would at least give Wade a more informed perspective. Yes, a lot of things have changed in 10 years. But you know, it's not just that he's not talking with me. It's that he doesn't seem to be talking with anybody.
Well, to be fair, I don't think that he even knew AdventureStrips.com existed back in 2003 because he was so involved in the comic book world, which was ignoring web comics and digital comics for so long, as we were just the you know, the people that couldn't afford to be in print or weren't good enough to be published.
Yeah, but ignoring us.
Now, please, that wasn't Mark Wade's opinion. He's been getting a lot of heat from retailers, even. Like, when the guy says something like...
Yes, the retailers are insane. I'll go along with that.
Says, I want to do digital. Retailers go, you're against print. And when he goes, I want to do digital comics... You know, some people are up in arms like, we've been doing this for years. I think he knows that. He knows that he's not trying to take credit for your
Actually, I think I brought up Adventure.
I don't think it's a question of taking credit. I don't feel threatened by Wade at all.
We were just
I don't feel snubbed either. I'm worried about him. I would like for him to succeed.
The fear. If I could paraphrase T here, the fear is that Mark Waid's Thrill Bent will be another Zuda. Which, I mean, I don't know if you remember back in the time, Zuda was huge and everyone was really excited about it.
Well, not everyone.
You know, this was the industry.
Zuda was huge in people's minds anyway. It never achieved much traffic.
There was a lot of publicity from the mass media about it and a lot of pushing from Warner on it. But, you're absolutely right. If Wade fails, it's going to be a situation of e-comics, the internet doesn't work for us. Even though there are examples, I mean, like Kurtz, like Pete Abrams, like so many others that have made a great success at it, it's going to be the independent small-timers as opposed to the big company, and they're going to be pushing the thing where it doesn't work if Wade fails.
It's already succeeded. What is failure? I mean, that's how you have to know. Like, what is his goal?
Zuda is failure. Zuda is a lot of publicity... that then crashes and burns because you repeat the mistakes of the 90s.
Thrillbent is not... I'm just saying, okay, Thrillbent, let's separate these things for a second. There's Mark Waid, who's a writer for comic books, who is thinking digital is the way, and he's even selling awesome comics to fund... He's selling a ton of his old comic collection to fund his digital comics company. Like, crazy awesome things that I wish I could buy, but I don't have the money. Like the first appearance of Challengers Unknown. But then you have Thrillbent, which is a project of Mark Waid. Now, I think that if you say Thrillbent, what if Thrillbent fails? Well, you don't know what Thrillbent is yet. You don't know what they're going to have free comics. And he said what it is. If you listen to his panel, he said that it's an experiment. You can't fail really with an experiment of giving comics away for free. Mark Waid, though, has already succeeded in the fact that he put out a little PDF called Luthor. And that got the attention of Marvel calling him up and saying, we really like the way that you laid this comic out. And not just laying it out, but the way that it's paid. It's just a whole new craft to comics, the comics craft. Forget about the business side. For Marvel, now I'll tell you, I've dealt with Marvel and DC stuff, and it's insane to get a big ship like that to steer in a new direction. It won't happen. The people from Zuda could tell you that. I've talked to them, and they said, we wish we could do everything we wanted to do, but the corporate ship does not turn on a dime.
And you just hit the key word there. I mean, because it is – we're small timers no matter how big we get. You know, like I said, Pete Abrams or Scott Kurtz, they may be huge in the webcomic world, but it's big fish, small – or excuse me, little fish, big pond. You're dealing with a huge corporate culture. You're dealing not just with small companies. You're dealing with Disney and with Warner Brothers. And they don't change very easily. They have their mindset, whether it be web comics or electronic comics, or it be the music industry or the movie industry. They are not just slow; they're glacial in change.
Yeah, and for them to call for even Joe Quesada doesn't really have the power. He has the power because he runs Marvels per se. But for him to call Mark Waid up and say, you know what, we're going to try this digital thing with Nova. Let's test it out. And I'm sure we can't see their numbers, of course, but I'm sure it went over gangbusters. The Infinite comic, I enjoyed it. I liked the pacing of it, but I thought it could be better. That's why we're experimenting with our stuff that we have. But I believe that it's already succeeded to the point where if his goal was to be a bridge between digital comics and the comic book world that's sinking, the direct market, then he's done it. And he's kind of done it to the point of, guess what, retailers? I don't really care. I mean, he does care about retailers. He loves comic books. But he's saying this is the future, and we better start figuring it out as comic book makers, not web cartoonists.
He's being an advocate, though, for the form of sequential art. And I think that's the important thing, is he's advocating conversations among people to share their experiments, to share their ideas, and let's figure this out together. Because I think he understands that the real ideas and the real success of this new venture is not going to come from like you guys were saying, from a big corporation because there's too much red tape. There's too many people involved. It's going to come from the small people and from the, you know, the people that are willing to fail, that have the opportunity to fail and aren't worried about their bottom lines. You know, they're not worried about having to lay people off if they don't make money off of this venture.
Yeah,
necessarily. And, yeah. And I think the thing that does scare me a little bit is the fact, if you look at something like Luther, it took 5 or 6 people to put that together. You know, I don't have the exact number. I think it's 5 or 6 people, but you had an artist and a writer and a letterer and the guy who put together the PDF and all that. I think the more people that you get involved in the production of anything, the more money you have to make off of it for it to be successful.
Absolutely.
You have to really streamline everything right down to your marketing and advertising and eliminate as many steps as you can along the way. And the smaller core group that you can build to put out a good product, the less you need to be successful at
that. That's why Jason and I kind of jumped on this, like, let's get in this forum and show them how a two-man team. I mean, if you go to HeroByNight.com, everything there, pretty much everything you see is a two-man team. It's me and Jason. It's me, and we plot together. We do a lot more than he just colors my work. You know, he doesn't just make it look pretty. We talk things out back and forth, but we're quick. Like, we put together our cover within a few hours. We needed a new cover for this new digital thing, and boom, we had it done. We went into the Mark Waid forums to kind of show these people that are still thinking in the old ways of, well, who are we going to get to letter this, or who are we going to get to color this? You got to go in and show them that this can do it. You know, you have to wear more than one hat in our world, in our digital world. And I think we're sort of a bridge back to them. You know, that's kind of how I'm approaching it. So,
well, I hope so.
Well, yeah. Kind of going on that same topic, another story that we were doing is that between the print and the digital world is this call for Eisner to expand their digital categories. Now, that's kind of play into this.
Well, it is a situation of the old guard versus the new world. I mean, again, just like the corporate culture, the people that have been in comics for 30, 40, 50 or longer, for the most part, are going to be scared of the new medium. It's change is scary, and it is going to be a situation.
It's not so much a versus in the case of the Eisners, because they do have a digital category, and they certainly seem to be serious about keeping it. It's just that resentment isn't the only impediment to understanding. There's some kind of tone deafness at work when a Sam and Max comic that's essentially an advertisement for a video game gets the Eisner for 2007. I am thrilled beyond measure, honestly, that the Eisner nominations for the last couple of years now have not included any ridiculously embarrassing categories. Ridiculously embarrassing nominees, because there have been a few that seemed to be questionable. the soul of what Lauren is saying is that it's really weird to be evaluating long form, short form, and infinite canvas experiments all in a single category. And with exactly. that, I'd have to agree.
I take that one category that they have. I mean, that's their baby step towards us. I mean, and look how long it took for them to put that out. They're finally thinking that it's the same thing as the I think I have the name, the Cartoonist Society. National Cartoonist Society. They're finally going out after people in the digital medium, and they haven't had that many in there in the past few years, but they're taking their baby steps, they're getting there, and they're realizing that this is a medium that isn't going to go away.
Well, here's the problem with both the Eisners and National Cartoonist Society and any of these societies. And anytime you do any award show for comics, even online, there are just too many. I mean, it, you know, the number of web comics that exists outpaces the number of people in the world at this point. because some people have two comics. I mean, you laugh, T, but you're the fault. You're wrong. We have so many.
We're still somewhat shy of 7 billion, but yeah, we're getting there. We're getting
close. And without any gatekeepers, without any way to tell how do we even begin to filter that down? And that's the problem that the Eisners are facing. That's the problem that the NCS is facing. Right. That's the problem all these people are facing.
It's very easy. I mean, the first step, if the name Shia LaBeouf is on it, it's not real.
Nominated.
Nominated.
I have a really serious solution to this problem. Let's simplify it. Basically, the Eisners, before webcomics came along, you know, they never gave an Eisner away to someone in the comic strip market. They gave Eisners away to long-form storytelling and based on what Will Eisner was about, sequential art, like excellence in sequential art. So I think that this whole digital category should probably just go away for now until they figure – because otherwise you are going to have this weird thing where it's like, hey, I'm putting out this digital thing on Comixology. Can I be up for an Eisner now? No, you can't. It's like it has to be exclusive. It has to be sequential art. It can't be a gag strip, or it could be humor, but it couldn't be, you know. I mean, I know that like PvP won it, and it's just because there's this confusion, you know, like that's quality art and it's quality storytelling.
But I'm also thinking, I'd love to see the categories mirrored
very well.
I would love to see the categories mirrored because there is a difference in the way that we handled comics or strips or sequential art on webcomics than we do in the print medium, because there are so many different variations we can do, plus taking the full advantage of the electronic media, which you cannot do in print. So the storytelling and artistic abilities are different.
But isn't that like saying I can make a movie on my home computer now, I want an Oscar? Give me a freaking Oscar, you know?
Let's take a look at that. I mean, Dr. Horrible went up for an Emmy.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, if it's good enough, then it's good enough.
Or you could go for a Harvey Award or other awards or just whatever. I mean, you know what? The bottom line is that awards are stupid. And I think that
we've said this before. I mean,
what's
the importance of it?
No importance of it. I've talked to award winners, and their awards sit on a shelf, and it makes them feel great. It might get them a little more exposure, but the only thing that really matters to awards is you want one. I want an award. I want to put my comic up for an award every year, and screw that.
I strongly disagree with that, because if you're up for an award, you can call every single con in the country and say, I'm an Eisner winning artist, so you are going to fly me in, and you're going to provide my hotels, and you're going to give me free space, and you're going to give me an opportunity to speak. And as soon as you get an award, the cons start saying, yeah, we'll do that. And the cons are valuable. So
you've only won an award because you want free airfare to
car? I want to earn points on my Eisner card for all of this, because that is really valuable. And why are all the Oscar movies coming out right before the Oscars? Because an Oscar nod translates to money.
But to quote Paul Newman, at the very end, it's just an empty cup. The glories of live recording, folks. We had a little bit of a power outage here, so we're going to pick up the conversation right where we left off. And I think T was going to say something about the Eisners, wasn't he?
Yeah, he had just finished on the meaning of life. We're not going to get to the Eisners.
There is the very reason that getting an award to pick the best thing that is in the comics field, the very reason that that is so difficult is the reason to do it. There is this swarm of material, and yes, when an awards ceremony is at its absolute best, it can confer not only legitimacy, but even awareness on some excellent work that would not get as much exposure otherwise. That's the reason to care. That's the reason that I keep paying attention to the Eisner nominees, even though it sometimes breaks my heart. And that's the reason why other awards ceremonies need to go forward. Now, I think that there would be a bloodbath if the Eisner digital comic category were removed. I think that would, I understand why DJ is proposing it, but I don't think that it would be taken that way. However, it's certainly a good idea to develop a set of awards that recognize digital work more specifically. There was such an endeavor for a number of years. I was involved with it for a while, called the Web Cartoonist's Choice Awards. We basically ran it like a passel of drunken monkeys.
No, I don't think that's fair.
But I would dearly like for some more mature people to try such a thing.
Right, and to stick up for the National Cartoonist Society, when I talk about them not having many, I mean, yeah, it's taken them a while to get around to some of this stuff, but there is also a set of standards that they have. You know, you have to make a certain percentage, over half of your money has to come from the strip or cartoons or comics that you do, and that includes the webcomics. So, I mean, they are looking for quality as well as professionalism over at the NCS. So a lot of what they're doing, I can understand on a professional level, as much as it might snark me off as wanting to be included in, which since I'm a writer, I can't be anyway, but it does come through. And I can see the Harveys and the Eisners and so many others saying, these people aren't real. They aren't professional. So we aren't going to be including it in. The fact that we're finally getting included in some of this stuff, even if it's just a lone category over in the Eisners, that's a huge step towards being accepted in as professionals, which a lot of us are.
Question. Jerry Scott is in there, isn't he?
I'll throw in a little, like, business advice. I mean, it seems to me that these awards, awards are really about giving to people who, giving people who deserve it, or that you think, like you personally think they deserve it, not about yourself. You shouldn't be like, I deserve that award. I want to. There's so many dudes that are like, vote for me in the Harveys, vote for this. Yeah, that's great, because then you could win or be nominated for a Harvey because you have a huge audience or have a huge audience of other creators. But until the mindset in business, in your business as a webcomic creator, has to shift to stop worrying about that. Care about the things that you like and want to see them succeed. When you see somebody, say good for them, but don't think, oh shit, I'm not in it again. Screw the Harveys, or screw the, you know, why won't they give me another category to be in? That's kind of the weird vibe I get with webcomics world, is like, wow, well, why is this in there? That's not in there. It's the judges. I mean, you got to just be kind of like, it's what they liked. And I appreciate, you know, I kind of appreciate that. Or when I see someone get an award or a step up, you got to stop worrying about that shit. You got to go, oh, sorry, excuse my language. Believe me.
Oh, no, our reading's done.
You've got
to
go.
All the 8-year-olds who listen to this podcast have just closed their ears in horror.
No, I completely agree with you, DJ, because I think that we need to concentrate on the quality of what we are doing.
Like, this segues right back into Scott Kurtz's point. You won't hear us agree on very much in life, but we actually had a nice Twitter exchange yesterday. I was having dinner and I saw, oh shit, he's going to attack me. Because I wrote something on djkaufman.com about my feelings of the whole giants coming in. And we talked about this. T and I talked about, everybody talked about this in webcomics, like sooner or later. And back then it was Frank Miller or Brian Bendis or whoever was going to, you know, roll into the webcomics world and plant their flag and say they invented it. And we were all like a little scared of that, or like we didn't want people to take credit. But the whole point is that people better start upping their game, because readers aren't going to read crap. There's so much crap on the internet, and people like Mark Wade or DJ Kaufman or Scott Kurtz or Penny Arcade Dudes, they're putting a lot of quality into their craft. And you need to start thinking about your craft. And that's why we're more excited about. I mean, I could sell a lot of comic books. I could sell a lot of digital comics, but I'm not worried about the marketing aspect.
And that's actually, I hate to sound greedy, but that's the final arbiter of whether or not a comic is, quote, good or not on whatever level, is how much are you selling from it? How many readers do you have? How much money are you making from it? I mean, granted, I mean, that eliminates everything from the 90s, but it is a situation of
how to sell it. The thing that sells comics, really, honestly, I mean, you might say, oh, what about this shitty comic? Or what about Shia LaBeouf's comic? But the thing that sell your comic is making it good, making the craft good and doing it for a long time, doing it over and over again and experimenting. That's kind of why Jason and I jumped into the Mark Waid forums, and we were like, we saw these people like, how do we do this? How do we format this? And we just jumped in there and said, here's what we've been doing. We just want to share. There's other people that are like, don't share. Don't share what you know, because then they'll take it and run with it. It's like almost like saying, how did you draw your comic? With ink? Well, what kind of ink? Well, I'm not going to tell you because it's FW acrylic ink and it's magical. You know?
Well, there is a sort
the blood of virgins.
Different vibe. I mean, web comics have always been about, you know, kind of helping people out. And I think one of the frustrating things about the Mark Waid, about the Eisners, about Zuda, about all these people coming into comics is we really, really want to help people. I mean, we do this podcast because we want to help people. Every webcomic creator I've ever met wants to help people out. And it's sort of frustrating that we're all sitting here saying, let us tell you, let us give you information. They're like, no, we don't need you. We can do it on our own. We're fine. So
maybe, or they just can't. Corporations can't listen to you.
That is sort of the problem.
Unless you have the ear of the people who are in charge, they're not going to pay attention to you. This is where the whole Mark Waid thing comes. He has the attention of the people. He has the cred with the people that can make differences. And this is the whole thing, too, is like we're kind of going on. It's like you can have the best webcomic in the world, but if you don't promote it and you don't know how to get it in front of an audience and in front of people, you're never going to have fans. If you toil in obscurity forever, you know, it's still not going to help you out. You still do need to promote yourself, and you need to promote your work, and you need to feel good about your work and what you're doing in order to keep doing it for 10, 20 years and 30 years and 40 years.
Right. And the corporations.
Going back to the Eisner thing is like some of the value in that. Like I've applied for many design awards and I've won some design awards too in my professional life as a graphic designer. And it's not, I don't think it's just about ego. I mean, it's also getting feedback from your peers and from that larger, you know, authoritative body as well. I have actually gotten back, I don't know if this actually happens in these awards, maybe it should. But, you know, I get feedback from judges and peers that say what was good and what was not good about my work. And that is quite enlightening to get this critique back about, you know, pieces that I put forward and said, what do you think of this? Basically, like, do you think it is the best or what do you think, you know, what are you thinking of it? And I mean, it's getting compared to everybody else who's submitting, but these are professionals who are judging it. I think one of the big problems with the digital comics category as it is it doesn't seem very well defined. Like the most awards have a very specific criteria around what an award, and it puts some of that value in so people can go, oh, they won an Eisner in blah, the black and white, so they're the best black and white one out there. Well, it's like the best digital comic because there are so many different flavors of digital comics, things that people are doing. There's no way to really say you're the best black and white digital comic artist that there is on the web, or you're the best infinite canvas artist on the web, or you're the person who's doing the best work to be recognized as being an authority in the field, or being recognized, you know, for those, as we discussed, you know, plane tickets and whatever. It's like when people are doing things like speeches and things, like usually you're an authority on something.
Let's just go to the name of the awards then. You know, like I just go back to the name of the awards. It's Eisner Awards. It's about sequential art. I mean, you could say PvP won it, but he didn't win it because he does dick and fart jokes. He won it because he was putting a lot of craft into his work, and he did long storylines. I think, if I recall correctly, he did a really touching storyline or something that really was like, wow, this guy's more than just dick and fart jokes, you know?
But not much more.
And that's what put him over the top and put him in that category. And
there's also a certain degree of popularity that goes into it. I mean, I don't care what the award show is. I mean, it's going to be what those people want. I mean, I look at the Academy Awards, and there are so many artsy-fartsy films in there that the average person has never heard of, but the people who go and vote on these awards all slaver over, and that's why those things win. I mean, it almost seems like it's the kiss of death to be popular.
Have you read the judges each year? Because sometimes they're really sort of obscure people to me. Like, they're like the head of the library association. You know, like, they're not into the – like, I really doubt – I don't know who the judges were the year that PvP won it, but – I don't think that they were all Scott Kurtz PvP online fans, because even back then he was a popular cartoonist, but it wasn't like they saw the name and they said, yeah, let's just give it to him.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that the popularity is what brings it forth. And then they may do a little research into it and see what's happening with it. But it's still going to, you have to have a certain threshold that you're going to reach. And PvP does it, but you're still also going to be getting a lot of stuff submitted. In there. Yeah.
It also gets submitted. The Eisners are a submission only venue, and that means that a lot of good material does get ignored because people haven't bothered to submit it. I've never submitted to the Eisners. I've never felt like my work was good enough.
I think as artists, we are our own worst enemies in this respect. It's the only reason that I've won anything was because my boss decided that they would submit stuff behind my back. So this is sort of because I work for an institution, they can do this. Marketing department, you know, the head director says, we're submitting this and you don't get a say. And I'm like, oh, crap, you know, like, but you can be surprised. But this is, again, it's like, you know, there was some bashing on the idea of I would like to win an award. Well, at the same time, if you don't step up and say my work is worth something.
Well, it also goes back to, work. I mean, we're still webcomics people, and there's a certain amount of computer geek in all of us. And, I mean, I hate to paint with a broad brush, but the vast majority of those of us who are geeks and nerds are going to be very introverted and think that they're not worthy of it or going to do it.
Well, that's very true. But it's very difficult, like you said before, to sift through everything. And this is the reason why probably people are winning the awards, is that there are people who are stepping up, and then there are people who are doing fantastic work that are suffering with that whole self-esteem problem, going, oh, I'm not gonna get anywhere, so I'm not going to bother to submit my work to something that I couldn't possibly win. But, you know, if you don't play, you can't win.
Go back to the Academy Awards there, because, I mean, take a look how much promoting and politicking that goes on with the Academy Awards. Even for big blockbusters, you know, I mean, vote for us because we had the best special effects. I mean, even in minor categories, there is so much politicking and so much promoting that goes on. And it's the same way. I mean, there's a lot of us. I as much as I like my comics, and as I love doing them, and I know how much quality that goes into them, I can't see putting my stuff forward because I see that there are so many other things that are better, no matter what type of feedback I get. And that goes part to my personality and part to the fact that I don't think that there's a threshold that we have reached yet.
I kind of feel like this last half an hour talking about these awards is completely just a waste of breath. I mean, really, we're talking about why are these people getting the awards? How are they voting? We don't know. Who cares? Like, really, who cares? Just focus on your work and make it better.
Exactly.
Well,
I think that maybe we should. But we can wrap up on that note, although albeit wasn't very a positive one.
I'd say it was very positive.
Our listeners haven't thought that we've wasted our breath, but we have gotten a little bit at the meat and to the bone. All right, so I want to thank our guests for this discussion. Take a step back. First of all, I want to thank T. Campbell of tcampbell.net for coming on.
Thanks.
Much appreciated. And then I want to thank DJ Kaufman, Jason Embry of Hero by Night. And thank you for stepping in today. And then I want to also thank my co-host, Mr. Eric Kimball of Playboy.com, Marie Terry of EvilSpaceCat.com, and Thomas Revor of 910comics.com.
Right, and let me also give a shout-out to two of our members over at 910. Both El Gunish Shive and The Watch are celebrating their 10th anniversary this year.
Awesome.
That's a long time to be in webcomics, folks.
That's like a million years.
That's 70 years and dog years.
Oh, don't start. So let's wrap it up. Thank you again for listening to us today on the Webcomic Beacon newscast, which I'll learn to say by next couple weeks. And if you want to check us out, you can definitely go to the website at webcastbeacon.com and listen to our other shows. We highly recommend you check it out. So have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, listeners, just to let you know, there was a little bit of a contention or discussion after the recorded show on Twitter by Jason Embury and DJ Kaufman. Letting you know to go ahead and go to the news post at webcastbeacon.com for this episode of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And check out the first comment, and so you can see a bit of a little bit of a discussion that happened after the show. I said I would say to check it out on the show, and here it is. And so, see you next week.